What's up, everyone? This is the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. I'm your host, Scott, joined by Rich with your average everyday Chiefs talk. All of our previous recordings are available on all major podcast platforms. Just look and search for the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast, as well as you can search for us on various social media pages such as Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So far, it's only been what 5 days, I think, here to the new year. Any things happened so far in 2022 that's been better than last year, Rich? Or how's, I guess you'd say, your first week of the new year going so far?
Yeah, my first week of every year, because of work, is just pretty intense. So now, for me, it's just another year. I'm trying to wrap things up so things can slow down for me. And that's really it. How about you?
Yeah, like I said, not too much so far. Obviously, I'm still away in North Carolina at the moment, but I'm still actually working from home currently. But nothing too, I'd say, too crazy or busy so far. I will say, since I'm actually, like I said, I'm here in North Carolina, I'm in Charlotte of all places, I am going to the Hornets game tonight. So I'm actually kind of looking forward to that, because I've been to, I think, I want to say, two Hornets games in the past year, and I didn't get to see LaMelo Ball, who was the rookie of the year last year, because he was either injured or, one way or not being able to play. So it's actually exciting to actually finally get to see him play live tonight. So that's, I'm actually looking forward to that for sure.
Who are they playing?
Detroit Pistons, who's actually have only won, I think, seven or eight games this year. So the Hornets have a pretty good team.
They're terrible, aren't they?
Yeah, they're pretty bad. So it should fight, be a good.
Right? They like to fight, though. Isn't that who is always the guy that was fighting with LeBron?
I'm trying to remember the guy's name that you're talking about, but yeah, I know what you're talking. Yeah, I mean, it's normally someone on the Pistons that normally does that. So, but it should be
fireworks.
Yeah, it should be. I would expect the Hornets to at least win by double digits tonight, but we'll see. So, on that, but that'll be something to look forward to at least for the new year for sure. So today we're obviously recapping the Chiefs Bengals Week 17 game. And obviously, you know, everyone who from watching the game, the first half was incredible. We really didn't have anything to complain about in the first half or anything. I think everything for the most part went well for the Chiefs. I mean, obviously, we did give up 17 points. One of the touchdowns we had earlier was kind of a long touchdown by Ja'Marr Chase, which, like I said, we'll get into here in a little bit, some of the things. But the second half is where probably the meat of our conversation will probably be today. That's obviously where the Chiefs were unable to capitalize on really hardly any of their offensive drives. Only scored three points in the second half and ultimately ended up losing the game 34-31. But just, I guess, a quick, you know, review. Like, what were your thoughts, like, kind of like in those final, I would say, that final drive there? What was your thoughts going through when the Bengals had the ball, you know, just trying to not really score. I didn't even know what was going on there, but what were your thoughts on that?
Right, so I'm never a guy that likes to blame refs and stuff like that, because there are so many opportunities you get to be successful in a game without leaving it up to the striped guys on the field. But, I mean, if it wasn't for their missed calls, as in that false start on the left guard of the Bengals, and then the phantom Ohio State-Miami-like pass interference call, or holding, whatever it was there at the end that basically, you know, made them run out the clock, get the first down, run out the clock. That's my biggest part about it is, you know, let's say from a refereeing perspective. But, you know, let's say if there were no errors with referees and stuff like that, I don't get why we didn't just let them run the ball in and, you know, at least you get the ball back and you have a chance to tie. Now I get, you hold them, they kick a field goal, it's much better than having to go for seven. But I'm always one of those people that believe in at least give your offense, the team that can score points, the chance to win the game. Now, we technically did hold them, right, until that holding call on, I think it was what, Charvarius, or I can't remember who it was exactly. So, you know, hindsight's always 20/20, but like I said, that's the kind of, you know, head coach I would be is – I'm like, hey, let him score. You've got Patrick Mahomes. He's usually pretty good on those game-winning drives. So just, I know he hadn't scored all set the second half, but that would have been, let's say, my thought process And then, like I said, just leave it in the hands of your best player versus the defense who hasn't been able to stop anyone and refs that have just been tearing up the game.
Right. No, and I totally agree with like things that you were saying. And I think as we were talking about in the chat too, as well, as we were just like, well, you know, obviously let them score, but a lot of teams in the NFL, they just don't, you know, that's just something you just really like, you kind of don't do. You don't just give them, you know, an easy points. But in a flip side of that, like what you just says, or you just said, is Patrick Mahomes, obviously you have someone on your team that literally can bring you back in those situations, and give your, like I said, your best player on the team a chance to actually tie the game, you know, or actually take the lead in the game. So it's kind of hard to really, you know, I guess in that situation, how you would actually do that. But I would still agree more so like what you're saying is I'd just actually let them score. Even though our defense has in some previous games stopped teams on the goal line four downs, but you risk obviously in that point, as you could see what happened, we have no time left on the clock to come back. So there's obviously those time constraints in there too as well. So we'll get into that here actually here in a little bit, but I guess I'll just I'll let you start off with the box score from the game.
All right, so Chiefs come out of this game at 11-5. Bengals, why do I think that's wrong? Is that right? Yeah, that's the record. 16 games. For some reason, I'm like, wait, why does that not look right? So, yeah, Chiefs at 11-5. Bengals are 10-6. Obviously, the score of the game was 34-31. Bengals also clinched the AFC North with that win. Chiefs still, you know, win the AFC West, just kind of fumbled the number one seed until this week. We'll see what happens this weekend. And jumping into the stat column, I'll go with the Chiefs numbers since they were the visiting team first and then the Bengals. Total yards for the Chiefs was 414, 259 in the air, and 155 on the ground. They had two touchdowns on the ground. Two touchdowns on the ground. And then total yards for the Bengals was 475. 415 in the air, 60 on the ground. No touchdowns on the ground for them. No turnovers, no fumbles lost, or good amount of sacks by both teams. And then the time of possession, neck to neck. So Chiefs were at 30-54. Bengals were at 29-06. The leaders are who they should be. Patrick Mahomes was 26 of 35, 259 yards, two touchdowns. Quarterback rating of 113.9. Joe Burrow was 30 for 39, 446, four touchdowns, 148 passer rating. So Burrow definitely, edged Patrick out in every stat there, including sacks. He was sacked four times compared to Patrick not being sacked at all. So, you know, a good little quarterback battle there. On the ground, Jerry Williams led the way for the Chiefs with 14 carries, 88 yards, two touchdowns. And Joe Mixon led the way for the Bengals with 12 carries, 46 yards, no touchdowns. Receiving-wise, the main or the top wide receiver of this game was Tyreek Hill with six receptions. Sorry, for the Chiefs was six receptions, 40 yards, no touchdowns, and we all know who led the way for the Bengals with Ja'Marr Chase's amazing day. 11 receptions, 266 yards, three touchdowns. So that's the offensive side of the ball. I could do some quick call-outs defensively. Leading the way for the Chiefs tackles was Anthony Hitchens and Charvarius Ward. For the Bengals, Shadobi Awuzie and Logan Wilson. And then since there were a good amount of sacks basically on one side, Chris Jones had two sacks, Jaren Reed with one, and Frank Clark with one. So a good game from Chris Jones, Jaren Reed stepping up, and then Frank Clark continuing to pile up numbers. But yeah, that's what the box score looks like from a team and individual perspective. What did health-wise, what did the game look like after that?
As far as like on the injury report, Obviously, we lost Lucas Niang actually for the game, knowing the game of the season with the torn patella tendon. So that's going to be a huge loss for our offensive line. And obviously, before the game, Orlando Brown had a calf strain that he was unable to actually play the game. Now, they did. I did hear that he actually that strain or that calf injury is actually not a severe injury, pretty minor. I think he might actually even play this week. I haven't heard more about it, but he actually might play along with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who didn't play in the Bengals game. It's saying that he has a possible chance of playing this week as well. So we'll see if those two guys end up playing. Obviously, like I said, Nang being out for the season is a big loss to our offensive line. So we'll have to see as far as more of how our depth plays. Now, obviously, he was playing in place of Brown, who didn't play, which obviously he normally plays right tackle, who Wiley's been playing as of late, and he's been playing, I think, pretty, I'd say more than decent. He's been playing above average recently too as well. So we'll have to see it, you know, if we don't get any more injuries on that offensive line or more of our depth will come into play. But I will say just one other thing that kind of not injury related, but as far as on the offensive line related, I thought Joe Thuney played pretty well at left tackle, both with these offensive linemen going down and Nick Allegretti playing left guard actually played pretty well too. I mean, for the most part, I think the offensive line with those two injuries played pretty well in this game, I would say. So that, I think that, like I said, speaks for our depth and even, you know, Brett Veach as far as, you know, keeping, you know, the offensive line, you know, beefed up as far as we came in the injuries like we did last year during the Super Bowl and, you know, some of our run last year. So, like I said, that I think that was pretty good to see that our depth was stepping up in the game.
And to your point, right, is we didn't give up any sacks. So I know Patrick escaped there a few times, but I mean, you're supposed to do that. So overall, a decent job for a beat-up line.
Definitely, for sure. Yeah, it's not like we're sitting here talking about, 9 or 10 sacks like the Browns and the Steelers game the other night. So yeah. So that's kudos to, like I said, our depth on some of the injuries that we had, for sure. So normally I would next transition to high-level plays of the game. Before I want to do that is because since obviously we had discussed there wasn't too many, I guess you would say, great plays from the Chiefs other than a few in the first half. You know, there really wasn't any in the second half that we could really count on. So I actually kind of want to start off with something with some of the key plays of what I thought of why we actually ended up did losing the game. Now, like I said, and I'll kind of repeat what you said at the beginning of this too, refs don't cause teams to lose the game. Yeah, you could kind of see that, you know, it's like, well, there's some calls, you know, maybe towards the end of the game or, you know, some point in the game that didn't go your way. But at the end of the day, I mean, you got to overcome those penalties, or there's some things, other things that happen in the game that probably cost more so the loss than anything that the ref does in the game. So I kind of want to point that out because these next things that I'm going to list is more so is why I think, and probably more so even you, Rich, probably why we actually lost the game. So at the end of the first half, obviously we had that kick return for a touchdown by Byron Pringle, which got called back because of a block in the back call. And that happens all the time. I'm not going to sit there and say that could be a reason why maybe we lost. But one of the main reasons there on that point, which I believe it was, if it was not the next play right after that, after the penalty, where Patrick Mahomes escapes and throws a long pass to Tyreek Hill right in his hands. A wide receiver like his abilities or even his elite status should catch that. And I put that as one of the plays in this game, you know, that could have cost us in the end. Because think about it. That time is 28-17. He catches that ball. We're at least putting 3 points up right there. Maybe even a touchdown going into halftime 34-17. When they get the ball back. But I thought that was probably one point to put to point out as far as on this game. What do you think as far as, like, you know, that was probably an impactful play that, you know, obviously didn't happen.
Right. I mean, and you know, I'm probably his biggest critique. I might even be his biggest critique out there, period, right, with how he catches the ball in the instances that he does or doesn't. And that was one of those catches that, you know, I mean, and I'm nobody, right? I'm not somebody who he has to prove anything to, but that's the kind of catch an elite wide receiver makes. To your point, you know, puts us in a great position. We hopefully get some points there, as opposed to throwing that, you know, really long pass there at the end of the half. But, I mean, it goes back to just crucial drops with what you think should be routine catches for really good wide receivers in the NFL. So, no, I would without a doubt agree that that was a very impactful play. And, again, right, there's a whole second half. But let's say we kick a field, let's say we get that catch, kick a field goal. Now we go, I mean, technically, right, from a points perspective, the Bengals are tying the game at the end of the game. Now, of course, right, that's just all hypothetical, but I agree wholeheartedly that that was definitely an impact play, as well as, what was it, the one in the end zone? I think that, like, bounces off his face mask or something like that.
Yeah, but I believe the next play, I don't know which one you're talking about, I believe the next play, Kelce scores a touchdown on the opposite side.
Right, so, but, so, yeah, it's one of those, yeah, I mean, we had a positive outcome. But, I mean, when it comes to balls being thrown his way, right, it's got to make them.
Oh, definitely. And then the second thing, kind of more important thing, is the offense in the second half just – and I was sitting there watching the highlights here from today, again from the game, 3 points in the second half. I mean, you're putting up 28 in the first half, and you have this high explosive team like the Bengals were, you know, they have three great wide receivers. Their running back's really good. Their quarterback's really good. You got to constantly put up points against this team. So having us only putting up 3 points in the second half, I thought was another factor, you know, into why this, you know, the game ended the way it ended. And also on the outside of that, there was a 3rd and 5 with 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, which is – we actually end up getting the field goal. This is where we get the field goal. But the Bengals blitz. They blitz like pretty much blitz the house. I don't understand why we didn't call like maybe some short slants over the middle or something. But that whole play there on 3rd and 5 didn't make sense at all to me.
Yeah, no, I mean I wholeheartedly agree. Like the second half was just it was, you know, we have one of our buddies that talks about the NFL being scripted and stuff like that, and it's like, how did we just go so blank in the second half? And that's one of the instances in that strategy versus, let's say, that kind of a defense. Like, why didn't we adjust in a way? I mean, then again, right, you got to give credit to the Bengals in the adjustments they did make and the ones we didn't make, right?
Correct. And actually, I'm glad you brought off the why we didn't have any defensive adjustments in the second half. And this is the last one that I have that's probably more of the more impactful play towards the end of the game. Is why we probably, you know, end up probably losing the game too as well, is you have, it's 3rd and 27, and you're blitzing three guys or whatever. I think you're blitzing like 7 guys total, 6, 7 or 8 guys, and you're actually relying on man coverage on 3rd and 27 when Ja'Marr Chase has been dominating Jarvarius Ward and Rashard Fenton most of the game. Which obviously this brings me to another point: why it wasn't Snead on Chase more in the game? Because I think when Snead was on Chase, they didn't look his way as often. So that's another thing too as well. But as far as on this particular play, I just don't get it. Like I don't. You play to make sure they're obviously not going to get, you know, obviously the first down, 27 yards. But you should have had 2 safeties over the top. You know, obviously one making sure that they're helping out whoever has Ja'Marr Chase on that play. And, you know, you just give him anything underneath. Maybe give Burrow and the offense, the Bengals, 10 yards on that play. Hey, they kick a field goal. But guess what? Right. We get the ball back with a little bit more than 2 minutes to go and 3 timeouts. So there's just that play right there. And like I said, I know obviously you have some comments on this play as well, but that play right there just did not make sense anymore to me at all, what Spags called on that.
Right. I mean, and we talked about it that day is, heck, not even when you play Madden do you do that. I mean, it's, what'd you say, 3rd and 27. Like, keep everything in front of you, tackle, swarm to the ball, they kick a field goal. But no, we decided to put Ward on an island continuously, not just that play, right? And yeah, that one was just baffling. So it's one of those where, I mean, you know, the coaches study, they do their analysis of the opponent, and maybe they saw something like that, because I just don't get how our strategy changed that much for such a high-powered offense in Burrow, Chase, Higgins, Boyd, and Mixon to play that way. Like, I get there's confidence in your guys, but yeah, it just didn't make sense. So, yeah, I mean, it's just it's still baffling till this moment, you know, till this mm-hmm. moment, to this day.
It really is. But yeah, I mean, so what I kind of just listed out was kind of my own thoughts of pretty much some of the, you know, impactful things during the course of the game that I thought that obviously led to the Chiefs not having enough points. Obviously, like Booger McFarland would say, not having enough points on the board to win the game. Yeah, it just didn't seem like some of those, you know, plays were called right or obviously went away for sure. I was just going to mention, I know those were some of the key plays, like why I thought some of the things in a loss, but I did have one just quickly talk about. It was actually the first touchdown we had, which was that play action pass from Patrick Mahomes to DeMarcus Robinson. I thought that was one of the more impactful plays, and I know it happened our first scoring drive of the game, but I thought that was one to point out for on our side.
Yeah, I mean, and let's say on that play, Patrick scrambles to the right and then finds DeMarcus open. So I'd have to have an all 22 view to see what happened with the coverage. But if I'm not mistaken, I think the Bengals were in like one single high safety. And I think they learned right after that because, you know, same thing with the Raiders. As soon as you play the Chiefs with one safety high, they're going to make you pay for it. And I think they adjusted. I don't get why teams just don't stick with that strategy if you're playing against the Chiefs. But, you know, it is what it is on that play. And yeah, it was a good play by Patrick. Good catch. No lie, when that ball was in the air, I was like, please, DeMarcus, please just catch it.
So, right.
That's a good eye-level play. And really the only one that, let's say, I'll add that, I mean, it was points scored by the Bengals. But how about the effort and tackling or just pursuit ability by the entire – by, like, five Chiefs defenders on Ja'Marr Chase's first touchdown? Right, he catches a little curl route and takes it to the house. He explodes and blows by everybody. And I've watched it like four or five times, mm-hmm. just that single play. Tyrann Mathieu closes in a weird manner, and his effort looks – he just didn't look very Tyrann Mathieu-like. Nick Bolton gets his ankles broken. Charvarius Ward is kind of running at him like he's letting his, you know, five-year-old kid that just that he's been beating up all day score a touchdown, you know, willingly. So it's just one of those, man, it was just weird. Like I said, it was just a very weird game by the defense. And if you go back and watch that Ja'Marr Chase touchdown, it was great on his side, right? But just defensively, we just didn't look – we looked like the Chiefs in those first few weeks.
Yeah, I totally agree. No, I'd seen that play a few times, and it, like you said, very effortlessly. It looked like he just knew exactly what – it just seemed like everyone froze on the Chiefs side, and he just made that cutback, and he was gone. I mean, obviously, right. He's so fast. But I'm glad you mentioned that, too, because even though I didn't really have anything else really for high-level plays, because I saved one of the ones that I really liked for later on for my favorite moment, but is him. I basically have him for all his incredible plays that he made. Give him some credit, because I think he deserves credit more than anything. And normally, like I said, on high-level plays or anything like that, I normally don't talk about other teams' really big plays, but I think he deserves all the credit for obviously the plays that he made in this game and some of the things ultimately for the Bengals to win the game. All right, so my game ball goes to, for this game, Darrell Williams, just because of all the different, I mean, he had some great runs where he was kind of, you know, like getting, man, he was getting like 7-8 yards a run at times, you know, just bouncing off some of the defenders and some of the runs that he had made. And, you know, he's also, you know, 37 scrimmage yards away from 1,000 yards. This season, but that's who my game ball is because he just really, you know, ran hard this game and had another great game. I felt like I could have also went with the defensive line just because obviously we had 4 sacks total of the game, and you know, I felt like Chris Jones and Frank Clark and Jaron Reed all, or Jaron Reed all had, you know, tremendous games as well on the defensive line. But I just went with Darrell Williams for my game ball. What about you, Rich?
Yeah, so for me, Joe Thuney stepping in for Orlando Brown last minute, which I understand that, you know, they go through these, you know, change plans, right? Or these, what's the word I'm looking for? These backup plans. There's another word I was looking for, and I just had it about, you know, they go through these contingency plans. That's the word. On, you know, if all of our actual left tackles and right tackles are out, who plays left tackle? And yeah, Joe Thuney did a great job stepping in for Orlando. The entire unit didn't allow sacks. I know some of that is on Mahomes' escapability, but if you just watch even the Twitter offensive line experts breaking him down with Jeff Schwartz, Mitchell Schwartz, and Duke Mayweather breaking down Joe Thuney's play at left tackle, some of them are like, hey, you know, he could even play left tackle for anybody else if we didn't have Orlando Brown. So, you know, that's just the kind of guy he is, right? Joe Thuney doesn't make a lot of noise, doesn't bring a lot of attention to himself. He just does his job really, really well at left guard and now at left tackle. So that is my game ball.
Yeah, it's a good choice as well, just because like we talked about early in the episode about how our offensive line depth has been really good this year as far as someone getting injured and we filling in and still doing, you know, pretty much just fine and not losing a beat there on offensive line. So that could be that was definitely a good choice for a game ball as well. As far as player that disappointed, I didn't have an actual player I didn't really have an actual player. It was I kind of either chose just the whole secondary or you could also choose the defensive coordinator, Steve Spagnuolo, just for some of the things that he was doing just didn't seem. But I'm going to just kind of stick with the secondary just because, yes, in most of the plays, obviously the throws to Ja'Marr Chase, you know, our players were there, but there was also times where they just, you know, like the one Chase had the first possession in the second half, the Bengals had, where he scored that open touchdown and Sorensen didn't get over in time. It felt like there was some miscommunication on a lot of plays between the cornerbacks and the safeties as far as not covering certain routes or, you know, because I know there was one play that they showed a replay, which is a good play. I think it was Jarvarius Ward that actually he broke off his defender to come back in, and I felt like I saw that a lot in the game. But some of those plays didn't turn out to be as good as like the one play I think I just mentioned that actually I forget who the wide receiver was that they threw to, but he didn't catch the ball. But no, it just seemed like the secondary was all out of sorts, and it could be. Like I said, part of game plan, you know, maybe by Steve Spagnuolo as well. So it could be a little bit of both. That's kind of what I kind of went with as far as disappointment in this game.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things we talked about in the preview episode, right, is the Bengals are set up like the Chiefs. If you make them go, you know, anywhere from 8 to 12 plays on a drive, a bunch of short passes, you don't let them have that big play, they're a little bit different of an offense. You know, I mentioned that if maybe Mixon has a little bit more to do in the run game, and we take Chase and Higgins away, where Tyler Boyd gets a lot more catches down, you know, the middle, we could be more successful. So, yeah, I mean, for me, it's without a doubt Steve Spagnuolo. Let's say if your game plan maybe wasn't the right one initially, and once you started noticing that it wasn't working, change it up, right? I mean, which in this game, technically, we weren't doing good. And then, you know, there once Ja'Marr Chase breaks, which I wouldn't say that first Ja'Marr Chase touchdown was really on coaching because you had players in the area. They just didn't make plays. But the other ones, right? And then that third and 27 where you've got Charvarius Ward on an island, you are basically in zero coverage versus three really good wide receivers and an amazing quarterback, which, like I mentioned before, is, you know, Matt, you know, when you play Madden, you don't even do that. Right on third and 27, right, yeah. You put everybody in cover four. You know, you drop the corners in the secondary back and you keep everything in front of you, you tackle. Right. So, yeah, for me, the disappointment was Steve Spagnuolo, no doubt, just because the defense has been playing lights out really, really good. And he found a way to put Sorensen in a position where he could be exposed and he got exposed. Right. So, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt there on my part, let's say, where the biggest disappointment is in the game plan.
Yeah, and we didn't really mention that Daniel Sorensen mishap on this game. And I mean, there's nothing really to talk about too much on that because we all kind of saw what happened. He just didn't get over in time. It was his assignment. And obviously Chase had that wide open touchdown. It's kind of all only thing we kind of mentioned was just that he had a wide open touchdown, really. So, but we didn't really mention anything about Sorensen because we think we've talked about him enough this year. But he, like I said, he comes to those plays where he might give up a big play, and it did happened again. So,
when if you if you do the lower field camera view, you can see Tyrann Mathieu throwing his hands up again. You might get it on the YouTube Chiefs versus Bengals, recap. But I had to go back and watch it, and I think it was on Twitter or something. But yeah, I was looking for where's Tyrann Mathieu, because he was in the, because let's say Sorensen and Hill and Thornhill were the deep safeties, because Tyrann was playing, closer to the slot a lot more. And yeah, you could see him, just looking down the field. He throws his hands up and shakes his head.
Oh gosh!
So yeah, we were all Tyrann Mathieu on that play,
right? As far as favorite moment of the game, like we mentioned earlier, there wasn't a whole lot of high level plays running from this game. So this one was a high level play, but I just saved it for my favorite moment because I thought it was a really cool thing to see. Obviously, what I'm going to talk about is Patrick Mahomes is over the shoulder throw to Mecole Hardman, and he actually caught it perfectly. It was well designed play and perfectly thrown, obviously, to where Hardman can catch it. And like I said, he caught it, he didn't drop it, and it was kind of good to see, because I will say Mecole Hardman in this game, actually outside of that catch, he actually had some really good returns too as well. But as far as an actual moment from the game, I thought it was cool to see. I thought that was pretty much mine. Like I said, there really wasn't a whole lot, so that was what I went with for my moment.
Yeah, I mean, for me, right, we were talking about how I try to think of just something that was a positive moment, right? Because to me, a moment in the game where I was like, wow, was that 13-27 play that we gave up. I don't really have one that, let's say, would be a positive moment of the game. As a football enthusiast, in this case, a Chiefs fan, so it's a negative for us. It's just watching Ja'Marr Chase do what he did to us. It sucked, right, because he absolutely tore us up, as you mentioned. What'd you call him? A one-man show, right? That was just amazing to watch from a wide receiver perspective. And I feel very vindicated, because I said, in several of my pre-draft conversations, this guy may be the best wide receiver to ever come out of LSU. Mm-hmm. He is, without a doubt, the best receiver probably since Megatron to come out. But, he just absolutely tore us up, and he's been tearing up the NFL. So I think you guys can clearly see I have a admiration for the way Ja'Marr Chase plays wide receiver. So no actual good moment in the game except for a bad one in that 3rd and 27, and then, like I said, admiration for Ja'Marr Chase's play.
Right, and it's funny you say that. Ja'Marr Chase is probably the next Calvin Johnson, and it's very interesting to say that, because I was saying, I think last year, I was saying, oh, DK Metcalf, he's looking like he's going to be, right up there with Megatron, and look at the season he's had. He's kind of fell off there. Obviously, the Seahawks have had, their issues this year as well with their offensive line and just different things going on. But, I really think that Chase is now that guy, really, like you say. He's had an outstanding rookie year, and just he's exciting to watch. Like you said, he might not be on the Chiefs, but he's exciting to watch.
He's more of a small wide receiver, right? I mean, Megatron was, 6'5", 220, 230. DK is 6'3", 6'4", 220, 230. I think Ja'Marr is 6'1", 6'2", if that, 200 pounds. So, yeah, I mean, and if you look at his numbers at LSU, his contested catch, those jump ball type catches, is astronomical. They're great numbers. And in the NFL, if I'm not mistaken, I think he is the top wide receiver. I mean, and that's what he did to Charvarius on one touchdown and that 3rd and 27 play, or anytime Joe Burrow just would throw it up, right? It's just that back shoulder catch that Davante Adams is so good at as well. So, yeah, man, that guy's a beast. And I would love for the Chiefs to find a wide receiver like that to go with Hill and Kelce.
Right. No, that'd be awesome to find a steal. Hopefully not first round, because I think we talked about that. First round wide receivers for the Chiefs haven't been drafted well, but then again, like I said, Veach hasn't really drafted wide receivers in the first round yet. So, but well, yeah, hopefully we'll find someone upcoming in the draft. That would be nice to, like I said, go along with the other core of great receivers that we do have for sure. So I just want to kind of mention this today as well on our episode is, so we had some sad news, you know, once again, Greg Robinson, one of our former defensive coordinators we had from, I think, 2001 to 2003, passed away today at the age of 70. I know a lot of Chiefs fans are probably going to say, well, he probably didn't have the best time in Kansas City, because if you remember those years from 2001, 2003, we had really good offense, you know, offense at that time. Our defense was lackluster, I would say, during that time. But he did have, you know, pretty good career in, I believe, in Denver. It was, I want to say, was it one of the Super Bowls, or if for not both of them, he might have been defensive coordinator for. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think I'd seen something like that for. I know he was never for sure, but yeah, I don't know if he actually won them, or he was there when they won.
But he did have some. But when he was, I know he when he obviously when he was in Denver, he did have some good defenses while he was there. I know that for sure. But yeah, as far as his time in Kansas City, like I said, probably a lot of people remember him not being, you know, as good of a defensive coordinator. I wouldn't say as bad as Bob Sutton, but he's probably up there as one of the ones that probably weren't one of the greatest we've had. But obviously, he's still, you know, part of the NFL family and somebody that you know, kind of wanted to mention as well. You know, for
yeah, according to all the fans out there. He was the coordinator of the Broncos in 97 and 98. So
cool.
Definitely did well. So it sounds like it was the players in Kansas City, not the coordinator, right? So we invested all that money on offense. That's going to be my excuse.
That's true as well. I mean, you kind of look at that on certain things too as well. Like we mentioned about the coaches, right, on our last episode, I believe, when we talked about Todd Haley and Herm Edwards about the players that they had on their team. So a lot of times, like I said, it might not be the actual coordinator and what he has, you know, schemed up for his players. Sometimes if you don't have the players for your, you know, what you want to, how you want to run your defense, it's not going to work right. So I do agree with that too as well, that it could have just been, you know, who we had during that time. I think one of them, I believe during that time, if you want to mention, is William Barty, who, don't want to get too much into, but I will say that he's probably my least favorite safety or secondary person in the history of the Chiefs organization. Just so many bad memories for him. But that's an example, right, of I think one of the players that might have played under him. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, if you don't have the right players for the scheme or, you know, how you want your run your offense or defense, it's not going to work out right. So.
Right.
On that. And then, so then lastly, also some big news that dropped today was on the, and actually here recently, was on the NFL exploring the possible change of the Super Bowl. I believe the Super Bowl is February 13th, if I'm not correct. They're in Los Angeles at that the new stadium that the Chargers and the Rams play at. Well, LA just came out, or Los Angeles, I'm sorry, just came out with their mask mandate that is now in place until February 15th. So obviously that's a 2-day gap between when the Super Bowl is played and when the mandate is in effect. So one of the main places that they obviously have tried to, or looking into, I'm sorry, moving the Super Bowl to is Dallas there at the AT&T Stadium, which I know a lot of people, like especially in Kansas City or Chiefs fans, you know, they're expecting us to go back to the Super Bowl again. It's an easier drive to drive to Dallas than it is to Los Angeles. So
yeah,
that's a very interesting thing. So what do you think about, you know, them possibly moving you know, to Dallas or somewhere else for Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, so it's funny because I was just talking about this last week, since we were planning a trip to San Diego in February, I think the week after the Super Bowl. And yeah, we actually decided to change our mind because not everyone we'd be going with is vaccinated, and they have a lot of rules, mandates, restrictions around all that stuff, right? So that's San Diego. LA is probably a little, you know, is much more populated, not a little more populated. And so I knew that was going to be a thing, right? So I started thinking about that, and I was like, man, what if they postpone, you know, they wouldn't postpone it because that has so many bigger implications. What if they moved it? Mm-hmm. I didn't even think about Dallas, right? I mean, like San Francisco, still in California. California's all doing the same thing. So I started thinking about what other venues could they move it all the way across the country to Miami, Tampa, you know, could Jacksonville host it or something like that. But so I didn't even think about the fact that Dallas and Houston are right there. It's right in the middle of the country. Well, I mean, southern part, but in the middle. So again, right, if the Chiefs make it, you know, I think there's almost no denying the ability to drive down there and at least hang out. Right. Attending the Super Bowl is different because it's such an expensive event, but I'm all for it. I know it's like for LA, they'll get it back. They'll be all right. Well, eventually when we get out of, you know, this pandemic that we've been in for 2 years, they'll get one back. And I'm sure Dallas was in the rotation over the next 5 or 10 years, and they just won't get that one. So. I'm all for it. If the Chiefs make it, great. Sign me up.
Yeah, and another thing too is, and this is all totally a different situation here, because I believe I can't remember if it was this year, beginning of this year or last year, whenever this New Orleans got hit with one of those other hurricanes they had, and for one of the games they were looking to relocate in Dallas because they practiced there. They were practicing there while they were still trying to fix, you know, the some of the stuff in New Orleans in there. I want to say if it affected the Superdome or not. Anyways, what I was getting at is when they were going to move the game, it makes sense to play in Dallas because they were practicing in Dallas. But Jerry Jones says, no, you're not using our stadium for any of your games. So they end up playing, I want to say, in Florida. I don't know if you called it. What's that? Yeah, Jacksonville, yeah. Was that this year or was that last year?
I think it was this year, right?
Okay, I thought it was this year. But obviously, this is a different situation. And if you get out of the Super Bowl, Jerry Jones would be like, yeah, let me get the Super Bowl because it's going to bring in a whole lot of money. So it's a little bit different situation. But if it, like you're saying, if it does end up in Dallas, I think there will be a lot more people that will, like I said, special locally for us, you know, in Kansas City, I think a lot more people will definitely want to travel just for the festivities. I've done it personally the last 2 years in Florida, you know, made the drive down there. I know it's probably not the, you know, easiest drive down there, but it's still not, I still think it's not like an out west drive to LA. I think that's even more farther, but it's fun. Like, I mean, like I said, I was in Miami or outside of Miami, Fort Lauderdale for the one when we won 2 years ago. And then I was in, you know, outside of Tampa Bay or St. Pete last year. And it's fun just to be there for the festivities, even if you don't go to the game, because obviously I didn't go to the game because, you know, the prices, like I said, are, you know, outrageous pretty much for Super Bowl. But just being there and being around other, you know, Chiefs fans and seeing all the festivities and different things, I think it's always fun to do that. So,
I don't think it's a timeline, right? They didn't say, like, a timeline on a decision or anything like that. So,
right,
it's going to be interesting because we know the virus thing isn't going to get any better over the winter. Mm-hmm. California is not going to make a health decision based on the Super Bowl. Neither is, you know, LA County. So, yeah, I mean, it sounds like that decision has to be probably made pretty soon because, I mean, you know, Dallas would have to get everything ready. Not just Dallas itself. No, I'm sorry, not just AT&T Stadium. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's in Arlington. Because it's in Arlington right next to the Rangers Stadium. So, you know, everything around there and everything that impacts Dallas, hotels, you know, restaurants, all that fancy stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's they have to basically plan a Super Bowl in 2 months when the other one has been planning for years, you know, so.
Not even 2 months, like a month.
And, weeks.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, that's a lot to go into. Like you said, hotels and everything in the Dallas area and just different things. And we're not just talking about a game, maybe not even a playoff game. You know, this is Super Bowl. I mean, this is one of the biggest sporting events in the world, you know, you know, up there with, you know, World Cup and all that kind of things. But yeah, it's a lot to go into it for sure. So, and we're looking at the playoffs in about a week and a half, you know, starting. So yeah, they really need to make the decision here pretty soon. So whether it's Dallas or I didn't get the chance to see if any where other stadiums might be. I'm assuming it's other domes, right? Not going to be like Lambeau Field, you know, in February, and obviously wouldn't hold that, you know, hold that many people anyways. But as far as what they would want for Super Bowl, but yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do. But I'm kind of really liking the idea if it's in Dallas, because obviously, for one, if you're wanting to go there, maybe if you're not even really, you know, within driving distance, and you're maybe out west or you're up northeast, you know, it'd be good to plan your flight now, because it's probably gonna be cheaper because they haven't planned it yet, right? They haven't said it's officially in Dallas, so a lot of things, or even just people booking hotels, will be cheaper right now because it's not official. But probably now that we've said it, now people are gonna start booking their stuff now. Yeah, it would be interesting, but I kind of hope it does get moved.
Yep. Yeah, I'm looking at Airbnbs right now.
Right. But, yeah, with that being said, that is actually all that we have time for today. Later this week, we'll break down our very last regular season game between the Broncos there in Denver for Week 18. And it feels weird saying Week 18 because it's the first year we've gone this far with that extra game. So, yeah, for Week 18. So thanks again, everyone, for listening. Don't forget to follow our podcast, and go Chiefs!